What's up, ladies and gentlemen? Welcome to Armchair Producers Episode 7. We apologise for the extended delay. It's been my health, ladies and gentlemen. I'm such a frail, delicate flower. But we are back, and we're just going to talk bollocks for a little while. With me, as always, is my partner in crime, Travis Croft. How are you, sir?
I am well. Thank you for having me at the salubrious surrounds here at Fried Brain Studios.
Yes, we had the dramatic intro for you of thunder and
lightning.
Yeah, very, very frightening. Let's just cut straight to the chase.
It's a big release this week. It's one we've all been waiting for.
Yes.
I grew up with the Super Friends. The Hall of the Hall of Justice, and you know, the League of Villains and all that kind of hoo-ha.
Yep.
And Justice League has finally got a release this week.
Yep. It is in the world.
It is
for everyone to rip apart.
Finally, I've been waiting for this film for a long time. I think in the last podcast I talked about how I was excited when we got the George Miller version was going to be made here in Australia. Of course, that never happened, but now it exists.
Yes.
And it's another interesting phenomenon in the DC Extended Universe.
Mm-hmm.
To look at Rotten Tomatoes, it has a 39 on tomato meter score and an 86% audience score.
Yep.
And for once, I'm on the side of the audience.
And for once, I don't like it. No, I'm joking.
Just to be different. Now, someone asked, everyone, I tagged this stuff on Facebook, but I was there and I had about half a dozen people going, why are you doing this to yourself? Or tell me, what did you think of it?
Yeah.
And my only response was a gif of Larry David going, pretty good. I was listening to some of my favorite review, one of my favorite YouTube reviewers on this morning, and he hated it. I thought it was pretty good.
Yeah, I feel like it's the in thing to hate this movie for no real reason. Like, I've seen a lot of critic reviews generally giving it like sixes and sevens out of ten, that sort of ballpark. And then the YouTube, Facebook, Twitter reviews are kind of, oh, it's either absolutely amazing, they've really course corrected, they've done amazing stuff, or everything's shit, it's all shit, everything's shit, I hate it, it's a big steaming turd, I hate it, and I'm going to kill everyone. It's running the spectrum.
It is. Look, this is a deeply flawed film.
Yeah,
100%. By any stretch of imagination, this is not The Avengers, which I think came as close to, well, at that point in time, perfection.
Superhero perfection.
I mean, they probably topped it with Winter Soldier and you know, maybe some might argue
arguably Civil
War. Yeah. I don't know. I'd agree with that.
Yeah.
But this is not that film. This is a deeply flawed film. If nothing else, you can very obviously see the joins between the film that Zack Snyder was making and the one that Joss Whedon has picked up to finish off or polish it off. And we were talking the other night after we saw it.
Mm.
They're saying 80% Snyder, 20%
Whedon.
The quippy, zingery stuff. I liked that, the Whedon stuff. And I think you can see that very obviously is, I'm assuming, his. Yeah. And maybe one day we'll get a DVD with director's commentary and the two of them will sit there in a room and go, that was me, that was you.
Mm. Well, there's a bunch of scenes that were in the first few trailers that weren't in this movie.
I noticed that as well, actually, yeah.
So this is the shortest of the DCEU movies. I would not be surprised if they do a Batman v Superman extended cut for this.
I've heard this was supposed to be 2 hours for... In one of the reviews I read this morning, they were saying it was supposed to be two hours 50. So, and that would make a lot of sense because one of my deep concerns about this when I heard it was going to be a 2 hour picture was we've got three new characters we need to meet, be introduced to, and start to care about.
Yep.
I don't think we really did, but that didn't matter quite so much. But I feel like at least in the first half of the film, there's massive gaps and chunks where you go, look, you know, you could have
story chunks
where you could have, I think there was stuff that was supposed to be there, which you've absolutely chopped it to the bone to get that 2 hour runtime after the shellacking they got with Batman and Superman last year. So I'm starting out sounding negative, but I guess the positive layer on top of that is to sort of this is my overall thesis is, this is a deeply flawed film with a lot of problems, but it's that much fun But those flaws sort of fade into insignificance.
Yeah.
So maybe this is what the people who go and see Transformers films and enjoy them feel like.
Oh, God, we're one of them now.
Oh, my God. But, like, you know, I felt like I was... There are points in a film where you go, sorry, you've got Amy Adams. Amy Adams is an Academy Award winner.
Mm-hmm.
She has nothing to do in this film.
No.
Absolutely nothing. She is wasted.
Well, you look at... I mean...
J.K. Simmons to play Keisha DeGord. He's in one scene.
Fucking good. He's an incredible actor. And there was all that hype of Twitter pictures of him at the gym. Holy shit, he's jacked and everything. And he's in one scene
for 4 or 5 minutes of screen time. And you're like why did you...
Holy shit.
Well, again, Academy Award nominee.
Mm-hmm.
Hot, hot, hot. And everyone's talking now he's going to go back and play maybe... James Jameson in this,
yeah.
he was incredible. He made that role his own in the Spider-Man films. And like, at least they gave him some screen time with the Sam Raimi films, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
But like, it's and I think that's potentially also a symptom of the fact that there's 40 to 50 minutes of film which wasn't on the screen the other night.
Probably
there's significantly more stuff for someone like him, for Commissioner Gordon. You know, I don't know why Martha Kent was in there again. I didn't need that. That was a real waste of time.
I think a lot of the things that are kind of filler in this are the leftover dregs that they're now tying off from Man of Steel and Batman v Superman, because this is tonally a very different movie.
They've gone to be much more levity, a much lighter feel.
Yeah, and it's basically a redemption story for every character, as well as
the whole property.
You know, Batman and Bruce Wayne, it's kind of, all right, I now see the error of my ways, and he's, you know, a bit more, he's aware that he went to a point where he even recalls himself, he says that Clark Kent was more human than he was.
Yeah.
Diana Prince, she's, through conversation with Ben Affleck, she's forced to admit she shut herself off and she now needs to kind of redeem herself. Ezra Miller, and every single one of us are like, okay, they were heading down this wrong path, and now this...
But being together, they're bringing them back on the track.
Yes.
That's a fair way of putting it. I was deeply worried about Cyborg because I know nothing about the character. I heard that some of the earlier reviews were going, oh, he just stands in the back and is this dark, brooding character.
Mm.
And I was like,
he was not.
No, I didn't. Sorry, I completely disagree with that. And I felt like he was almost one of his standouts.
Yeah.
I mean,
agreed.
For me, I feel the genuine. I mean, Gal Gadot, again, she's the best thing. She's
Wonder Woman.
Insanely lucky that they've got her in this role. And that, I mean, I heard people going, oh, well, you know, when you see this, you only realize that it wasn't just Gal Gadot, it was the director, it was the writer, and everything in Wonder Woman that was so good, and you can see it really doesn't just matter about her. I'm like, no, I thought she was outstanding again.
Mm-hmm.
She's probably the best thing they've got in the DCEU right now. I thought Ezra Miller and I don't know the actor's name, but who played Cyborg...
Ray Fisher.
...were fantastic. I mean, very different roles, obviously... Yep. I'd not a stretch to say that the Flash's role in this is the comic relief.
Yep.
That said, Ezra Miller does that perfectly, and I feel like that fits the tone of the film. That's what it needed.
He basically is this movie's version of Spider-Man's cameo in Civil War.
Yep.
And he does essentially the same job, where he's like, I've never been in a major fight. I just push people and run away. the fact that he is making all these jokes and he is kind of geeking out about, like, oh my God, that's your signal. And things like that. It is Tom Holland's Spider-Man. And that's fine.
And Cyborg, I think, is almost... he becomes almost the role that you'd almost expect Batman to play in a lot of ways, because he becomes almost the guy... doing the calculations and creating the plans, and oh, I've got a plan, we'll do this, and you'll do that. In a way, and like, he almost plays the role of Iron Man sort of played in Avengers, sort of, you know, hacking into things, and not doesn't hurt that he kind of looks a little bit like Iron Man as well. But I was super impressed with his presence in the team, and that
he wasn't just a generic brooding
flying guy with super weapons, and
he was actually positing. They controlled his balance between I'm a monster, my life is over, blah, 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 with I need to do something, I and this sense of heroism innately within him that they very clearly tried to do in Man of Steel, and they botched. And they, you certainly can't hang a whole movie on that tone, because it becomes very, but hang one character in amongst all these others where you've got more lighthearted characters of Ezra Miller and Aquaman, Jason Momoa.
Who, I mean, if there's a weak point in the film, I think it's him. He didn't have a lot to do. And I don't really get what he can do. He talks to the, he was a bit of a miss for me.
I think the big fault of this is one that we've generally praised DC on in the past, the strength of their villains.
Yeah,
Steppenwolf is fucking rubbish.
Rubbish.
But for the heroes, yes, Jason Momoa is the least rounded. There's inklings of kind of, all right, there's something, there's potential in there, not really shown on screen. I'm curious to see what they do in his movie, which I think is the next movie that comes out.
Potentially him and Cyborg suffer, again, go back to it, that 40-50 minutes of film, because I don't give a shit about either of his characters. Mm-hmm. They managed to pull Cyborg out of the fire very nicely through a very nice performance.
Yes.
And just some good writing for him and a good space for him. But
yeah,
the fact that there's so little for Aquaman to do, we learn so little about him, I don't know why I should give a shit about this character.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't understand why someone who's an Atlantean sounds like he's from Hawaii and he's like, yeah, my man! You know, like, it's just, that doesn't quite, like, and the scene with Mira, Amber Heard.
Oh, yes.
Amber Heard, again, nothing to do. There was a whole scene of her in the trailer coming out of water.
You think that? Billy Crudup.
Yeah.
Ezra Miller's father in prison is like, okay, you've literally got a timer on you because you can only talk through the two-way mirror for X amount of time.
And I was like, wow, you know, the Flash is related to Dr. Manhattan. That's kind of impressive. But he obviously, being a Snyderite, of course, directed Watchmen. So, but, you know, Amber Heard, I'm sure, I have, a strong suspicion, because there was a scene in the trailer with her that's not in the film.
Yeah. There's a lot on the cutting room floor of this.
I was just kind of confused a little bit about Aquaman's character. Like, why does he talk like that? Mm. Why does he sound like he's from a Bill and Ted movie?
I think part of it is he is someone who has shirked his bloodline responsibilities on his Atlantean side, but because his Atlantean mother abandoned him with his human father, he's always, well, in the Geoff Johns kind of redo of Aquaman in the DC comics, if I'm remembering it all right, which I'm probably not, he does have quite a chip on his shoulder about the Atlanteans and the fact that they have repeatedly tried to kill him because it's been usurped and they don't want the rightful heir coming back, and the fact that he feels that he was abandoned. He's kind of a nomad, so he's gone around and just, you know, done anything. He's taken the gap year.
So basically the same as Superman in Man of Steel.
Kind of, yeah.
But at the same time, he sounds like he has a little bit of Aragorn's character from Lord of the Rings, being that, you know, wandering around being a strider or whatever he was.
Yeah, it's that kind of thing, I think.
We'll give him time to see what happens. Yeah. I think, again, this is, I enjoyed it. It was the fun and the camaraderie, and I think the chemistry between the stars sort of elevated the film to a fun ride where, you know, I noticed shit happening.
Mm.
Like, there's a scene where Batman's sitting on, like, a girder on a scrap, and I'm like, the fuck did he get up there? And, like,
he's Batman.
And, like, there's a scene where, like, Wonder Woman's introduced and she's standing on, like, a Statue of Justice holding a sword, and, like, I'm like, what the fuck is she doing? How does she get up there?
Well, it's not only how does she get up there, because, you know, Wonder Woman, she can jump really high, kind of fly sort of thing. But why is she on the top of the Old Bailey in London when she lives in Paris, just coincidentally when someone's trying to blow up somewhere in London? Wait, did she find out about this? Was she, Was she just randomly walking the streets of London dressed as Wonder Woman? And so like, you know what? Fuck the London Eye. I'm going to get to the top of the old
She was just in town to see the Arctic Monkeys, and, you know, one thing led to another, and...
It's inexplicable.
Stuff. Because she's Wonder Woman.
Yeah.
And, like, you know, I'm like, so I'm seeing stuff in there, I'm noticing that, and I'm like, well, that's a bit silly.
Yeah.
That's a really silly scene.
Yeah.
But, like, and I went in with very, very low expectations after the last few of these. I mean, apart from Wonder Woman, they've been awful, in my opinion.
Yeah, that's your opinion.
But,
just go back and you'll have a whole new appreciation for it.
But, you know, but at the same time, you start to find yourself having fun. And you're like, I'm enjoying the Flash's quippiness and that whole millennial thing he's doing. I'm enjoying Jeremy Irons a little bit. He's very sort of... snarky, butlery kind of thing. It's like, someone's got a date, I got a date, and they're like, oh, it's about time someone in this house had one, you know?
Yeah,
and,
exactly.
And I'm just enjoying it. At the same time, I'm noticing it. There's this stuff there, and I'm like, wow, this is clunky. This is badly put together. Fuck, they're so lucky. It's a lot of fun. But I guess that what really put the brakes on at the end, though, was the fact, like you said already, for a company with very... We've said it again and again, Marvel have crappy villains. The best ones belong to...
DC,
they had a really poor one here.
Yep.
And it sounds, and I think I heard a reviewer say this week, it just felt like a transitional villain. Just someone for them to punch up while the team was forming until they can put Darkseid in the sequel.
Yeah. I don't know if Darkseid's going to be in the sequel, because considering the end.
Well, yes, we shouldn't, we don't spoil it too much. There are two after-credit scenes.
There are two post-credit sequences. One is purely fun for the fans. Are posing the question, who is faster? I'll just leave it at that. Those who know will know. Those who don't will just think I've just missed out on my meds. The other one does have much more of a leading suggestion on where the future of the DCEU is going to go. I think that it's going to have a lot more kind of strength going forwards with stuff like Suicide Squad 2. You may get some more hints of it in Man of Steel 2 if they actually ever do that. But I think that they're going to hold off Darkseid for a while, just because next year it's all about Thanos. And Thanos is legitimately a ripoff of Darkseid, and they're not going to want to say, yeah, you know what? They've probably resigned themselves to the fact Justice League is going to just about make enough money to make it worthwhile. But as if we can get the audience thinking, all right, they're turning it around, and if the next movie, if Aquaman is on the close to or as good a quality as Wonder Woman was, people are going to have a lot more faith, and then they can start building up to Darkseid. And Darkseid is a more interesting character than Thanos as a bad guy, but you have to spend time getting there, like Thanos. They're going to have a lot of other villains in there, and how they end Justice League, they have the potential to do that. So that's what I'll say.
Yes, that's fair. So it's just disappointing. I mean, I was actually... I think anybody who's a regular listener might recall how stupid I thought the Parademons looked in... they were just kind of nowhere in Batman vs. Superman with no explanation of what they were. I mean, in people like yourself or comic book fans, I go, oh, that's a Parademon straight away, and you know what that is.
Yeah.
Or there was that really weird scene with the Flash.
Oh, yeah.
Which, again, I got that because I've read that comic book, or one of the very few I've ever read. but, again, no one else made that. But, like, I thought they were going to look stupid, but they actually... I don't know. They didn't really bother me so much in this film like they did in the last one, because all of a sudden they seen someone that actually said, oh, that's what they are. And you go, oh, that makes a moderately tiny piece of sense.
Yeah.
You certainly don't want to spend a whole lot of time thinking about Steppenwolf, where he came from, what his motivation is, how it came to be that he decided to invade Earth now, because none of that's explained.
It's just, oh, because the Kryptonian's dead. And it's like, okay, the Mother Box knew that?
But why didn't it blow up before Kryptonian ever got there?
Yeah.
That was, he's only there for 30 years, you know?
Well, that, they could retcon that in theory, because in the trailer, not in the movie, he says, no Kryptonians, no lanterns. And there is a cameo of a lantern in the flashback sequence.
Yes, we saw that,
But they could potentially do this so that Hal Jordan becomes a Green Lantern at a point before Superman and Batman and all of that stuff, all of this stuff that we've just watched, happens. And he's already there, but he's off somewhere else in another part of the solar system doing something. So it now is the time that it is. The Earth is not protected by a lantern. But considering in that flashback sequence, there's so many superpower beings going on, and it's like, really? Okay, you were worried about one lantern? Okay. And then in the final fight, it's like, okay, Superman whooped your ass.
Irons him.
Utterly whooped your ass.
And that's just kind of a problem, apart from the fact he has no story and no motivation, and he looks stupid. He doesn't ever seem to really feel like a threat.
No.
You know, you don't really feel like things are, you know, like, the Avengers pulled it off quite nicely with Loki and the space people, I forget what they were called.
The Chitauri.
You know, I mean, that felt like, I mean, Loki felt genuinely menacing in those films. Mm-hmm. Lex Luthor in the original Superman films, the Christopher Reeve ones, you know, like, and the Superman 2, the best of them, you know, the General Zod and co. were genuinely menacing. They kicked the shit out of Superman.
Even in Man of Steel, Zod and his minions,
they do a number on him.
Yeah.
But, you know, and they had those big mining, the machines that destroy the world with the power of dubstep.
Hey, if one thing's going to destroy the world,
it would be dubstep. But, you know, Steppenwolf just doesn't really, like, well, whatever. He's hanging out in the power station somewhere, and you're like, okay, whatever. He just pops up occasionally, he steals the mother box, and takes off again. So that was a disappointment. I don't think they really got that part right. I don't know
but
what
they got quite... the heroes right. That's the important
they
thing
did,
about
this
movie.
And it's fun. It is what a superhero film should be.
Yeah.
It should be a fun ride. You know, have those little moments. Like, I'm thinking to go back to the Avengers again, that classic moment where the Hulk smashes that Chitauri ship and four lands next to him. And then all of a sudden he just punches him in the face and he flies off. And that chemistry between those two has been established. I started to feel at times like the chemistry perhaps between the Flash and Aquaman in particular. Mm. They've got a little sort of those personality clash kind of thing happening where...
Even the sequence where Flash and Cyborg are digging.
Yeah.
It's like it's a little spark of electricity.
See, and you're like, I can see, because I don't think Cyborg's getting his own film.
No, he's... I think he's... Cyborg and Green Lantern.
Or maybe you can have Cyborg pop up in the Flash film, a bit like the Hulk can't hang into a film by himself.
Yeah.
They stick Hulk in the Thor film and all of a sudden it's much stronger. You know, you can start to sit there and it's fun.
Mm.
It's fun. You walk out and you go, that was thoroughly entertaining. I forgot I was watching a big, dumb movie. You stop and think about it later and you go, yeah, that bit didn't make a lot of sense. But you know what? You didn't care because it was fun.
Yeah. Agree.
So I don't know what these critics... I mean, like, someone posted yesterday going, oh, Rotten Tomatoes has too much power, again. And I went back to my standard response to that is, Ghostbusters got a fresh rating.
Yep.
No one has to listen to... There's no reason to listen to Rotten Tomatoes ever again.
Yeah, the thing with reviews, and people have been doing this about something we'll talk about a little bit later, Doom on Switch. Doom on Switch at IGN got... an 8.5 out of 10, and when it got originally released,
7.1.
And people are just like, oh, yeah, it's a Nintendo bias. We're like, no, it's two different reviewers giving their opinion. They are allowed to rate it differently. Same for movies, same for music, same for TV. You go to people that you have similar tastes with so that you hopefully don't ever watch, hear, or experience something that you don't hate. If you watch something and someone said, oh, 8.5, and you go away from it thinking, no, that was zero for me, don't believe their reviews are going on. Try and find someone else who reviewed it in the same way that you see it. It's opinionated.
You're right. It is. It's, just to be clear, I just wanted to go quite a slight topic from the reviewing thing. Aquaman, I didn't realise, is actually, I assume, in production probably now.
It's going now.
A director in place of James Wan.
Yeah. And it's a...
Whoa, that's I don't know what to think about that. I mean, he's good to see an Australian directing a superhero film.
Well, I mean, did you see the rest of the cast as well? It's got Nicole Kidman, Willem Dafoe, Dolph Lundgren,
Patrick Wilson, Tamura Morrison, the bounty hunter.
Yeah.
Well, look, I mean, it's a nice cast. I'm just a little bit like James Wan. I mean, is the guy who did the Saw films
and Insidious?
Which wasn't good either. Didn't he do a Fast and Furious film?
I feel like he did. Let me just quickly check. I'm pretty sure he did two of them, maybe.
It's a strange choice for a guy who's best known for action and horror.
Fast and Furious 7, yeah.
And he directed an episode of MacGyver.
We don't talk about that one.
Yes, let's not. Mm. It's a strange choice. And I guess, well, we'll see what happens. I'm just checking the writers here. The guy who wrote Gangster Squad. And that wasn't good. So, yeah, okay.
But it's... I think it's got a lot of potential. It's a very interesting, eclectic group.
The story has potential. I'm just concerned a little bit, like, so did Superman.
Mm.
And I think if we had our time again, and I think if Warner Brothers had their time again, they wouldn't have gone anywhere near Zack Snyder for that film.
No.
They would have gone somewhere else.
Yeah.
I think Zack Snyder has tried to pick up, and of course Nolan, they came off the back of the Nolan films, and the Nolans were involved as producers to some extent, and I think you're talking about someone here like Christopher Nolan, who is capable of pulling off films that are that status, and Zack Snyder is not Christopher Nolan.
No. Hindsight, Warner Brothers are probably looking back and is going, we should have just backed up so much money to Chris Nolan just to do the first Superman movie. Just do that first one, because if they really wanted to have that grittier, more, you know, human difficulty issue of Superman, Chris Nolan would have been able to do that. And then it's like, okay, you can go off and make all the other movies that you make. We've got set now. We'll get other people come in and just continue it. So like, this is the palette that you play with. Boom.
Either that, or I have a controversial suggestion. If we could go back in time to, was it 2012? 2013? 2012? I would have, if I were a Warner Brothers executive, taken that dump truck full of money, because I think no one would have said no. I think he was over superhero films at that point in time and wanted to do space movies.
2013.
There we go. I think that dump truck full of money wouldn't have done the job for Nolan. I think he was over it.
Mm.
I would have driven that dump truck full of money back to Tim Burton.
No. Clearly you haven't watched any of his recent movies.
I haven't. I have.
Really?
Which was the last Tim Burton film? I haven't seen one since Alice in Wonderland, actually. That was enough.
They've
Alice in Wonderland made a shit ton of money.
Yes.
But also, he had that vision back in the 90s for a very original Superman movie. Now, potentially, I'm sure he probably wouldn't have gone back to Nicolas Cage now.
No.
That would have been interesting.
Have the toupee.
I'm sure Nick would have
to digitally remove the moustache.
Nick would have done it. Maybe I could have cast Nick as his dad. I don't know.
Actually, that would be kind of cool.
Yeah, but
Cage as Jonathan Kent.
I think if we back that dump truck full of money up and give it to Tim Burton and said, look, maybe we don't make the Superman movie just like you did with that outfit, famous costume that everybody said looked ridiculous with the shiny lights.
Mm.
But he was going to make the Death of Superman movie. Superman Lives.
Yeah.
So this is the story they actually just made. So, you know, in hindsight, maybe someone like Burton might have been a fairly original choice.
Maybe.
He has experience in the superhero scene. He made a very dark Batman.
Mm.
It was a different kind of dark to the Nolan films, but... Mm-hmm. Maybe that it would have been an interesting. It would have been an interesting experiment to try and join that Nolan-esque vision. But then again, the Nolan vision really didn't. The Batfleck is nothing like Bale's Batman.
No,
it's one of the things you have to constantly fight in your head.
Mm.
Is that this is not Christian Bale's Batman?
No.
Hindsight has 20/20 vision, and who knows what they would have done. But I think they're saying that Snyder will have nothing to do.
No.
With the next Wonder Woman film, I wonder if he's out.
Snyder's contract is done, and from everything that we heard in the production of Justice League, he's not coming back for more. He may stay on as an executive producer, like Chris Nolan is. He's noted as an executive producer on this one, but he has not had anything to actually do with this.
He might we have a personal tragedy that hit him and actually made him walk away, and obviously you wouldn't wish that on anybody. And I don't have a problem with Snyder. I liked Watchmen a lot.
Dawn of the Dead remake.
I was a huge fan of the first one. It hasn't aged particularly well.
True.
But at the same time, I thought it was a pretty laudable first feature.
Yeah.
And Watchmen was 300 was good. I think even Sucker Punch was pretty good.
Mm.
It was much maligned. He's still listed as the director of Justice League 2.
It'll be interesting to see if that happens. But question for you. Hot question. If he's not back, who would you want to direct it?
I think if Snyder decides now's the time to walk away from it, and from Warner Brothers' perspective, it is time for him to walk away from this.
100%. He's too toxic on the
suit. Exactly. He stinks all over these films, and this film's tried to run from that. He's box office poison.
He needs to go and make his own independent movies and reestablish
start doing
himself.
Something else. You need to go back to basics and find yourself a... I think if he's prepared to do it, considering he's already there and he's already directing one of our other properties, Joss Whedon's the perfect person to be at least creatively guiding the universe for the time being, along with Geoff Johns.
Mm-hmm.
He sort of did with the Marvel films. I mean, everyone will say Ultron wasn't great.
No.
But then again, Ultron was a transitional film again.
Yeah.
And it kind of did set the scene very nicely for what came after it. And I feel like we have to give him credit for a lot of the success that came after that. You know, the Captain America films.
Yeah.
Iron Man 3.
Absolutely.
Has to be tied in with what...
He was instrumental in Phase 1 of the MCU, which set everything up for the greatness that we have now. The ability for them to go off into space and do Guardians of the Galaxy, to have a buddy cop weird movie of Thor and Hulk. It's because of the groundwork that Joss Whedon laid.
You sort of said to me the other night, he's maybe not a great director, in the sense he doesn't have a great visual style... He's an incredible writer. Mm. So to have him sort of overseeing it is almost like the Godfather sort of saying, well, I think, okay, we can take stock now. This film will make money.
Yeah.
Suicide Squad made money. So I guess those two things are already in train.
Suicide Squad won an Oscar.
for sound editing or something?
Makeup.
Okay.
It beat stuff.
But there, you look, Margot Robbie looked great. but you know, he's the person to guide the strategic vision and go out and do a little bit like Star Wars has done, or you know, they went out and they got Gareth Edwards, who made an interesting film with Godzilla and monsters, and he made Rogue One. It wasn't very good, but they got that other Jurassic Park franchise. Got the guy who did the time travel film, Safety Not Guaranteed. And of course, he made the new Jurassic Park film, Jurassic World, which made a shit ton of money, and he's doing the next one. He was going to do a Star Wars film, I think, but
he was,
but
and
they
then,
too late.
J.J. Abrams is going
to do it now, but like, so they're going off and they're getting those young and interesting directors. Marvel went out and got what's his name, a New Zealand bloke.
Taika Waititi.
He was complete out of blue. Yeah. He's doing little New Zealand films about vampires, and all of a sudden he's got a $200 million picture, and of course Thor's going to make a stupid amount of money now. So that's maybe what they've got to do, and then maybe they don't need a giant impresario of a Whedon, a Zack Snyder. I mean, they've got James Wan doing, obviously, Aquaman there, but they go out and find themselves young and happening directors are doing interesting things in independent film, and say, here's a large wad of money, would you like to do a superhero film?
Yeah.
And you know what? I really hope this happens, but fuck, I would like to see Kevin Smith have a chance at one of these.
He said that he wouldn't do it.
He said he wouldn't. But if
there's one superhero movie that he should direct, and that is Plastic Man off my script.
Okay. Maybe what about Daredevil? He actually wrote Daredevil comics for a while.
Yeah, but he's also done the Green Arrow as well, and he's directed a whole load of Flash
episodes
and Supergirl as well. So he's on the edge.
I guess it's purely a personal thing because I know how much he loves this properties, and to someone to have that kind of passion for it, it'd be nice to see him have an opportunity and see what he could do with it. I doubt the studios, if someone said to him, I'd like to hire Kevin Smith for this, they would go, the guy who made the thing about the Nazi bratwurst.
I was going to say, from the director
of
Tusk.
Tusk and Yoga Hosers.
Yoga Hosers.
Comes, you know.
Man of Steel 2.
Look, it ain't going to happen. It's a pipe dream. And like Kev says he wouldn't do it. I don't know him personally, but seriously, if someone said to him, if Geoff Johns called in tomorrow and said, I've got a $150 million budget for a standalone Flash movie. I'd like you to direct. Do you think you could? Could you say no to that?
I know someone. I know who I want to direct the Flash movie. Jean-Pierre Jeunet.
The guy did Alien 4.
Well, he did do Alien 4, but I was thinking more of his work on Amelie.
Amelie.
Because it's got that cartoon-esque quality to it. It is quirky, it is unusual, it has got its own visual style, but it's all about the people, and he could do something really good with the quirky kind of ADHD flash that Ezra Miller has presented us with, the bright, the lightheartedness of it, the love and affection for that world. I think he could do very well.
Well, I mean, potentially, you would want to make sure that Joss Whedon isn't writing again, because the last time Joss Whedon wrote something that he directed, that was Alien 4.
Yeah,
that didn't work out well at all. I don't think it's a Flash movie actually lined up. I don't think it's actually even production or anything yet.
It's in pre-production, and apparently they're going to be doing the Flashpoint story.
There we go, 2020, my bad.
Which is interesting, because that could reset the DCEU in many ways, and could be what Ben Affleck recently termed as the graceful way of exiting the role of Batman.
It's interesting, he's saying he's not committing to playing Batfleck, not talking about playing Batman again, he won't be in the Batman, they're talking Jake Gyllenhaal might be cast in that role.
I think he could be a good Batman.
I mean, Jake Gyllenhaal's a wonderful actor. Mm.
And he came close to being Spider-Man.
He did.
And, they're both from the Animal Kingdom.
Yeah, so okay.
You know,
I don't know. I'm liking the older, graying Batfleck. He's playing, and he's kind of a. I'm liking the fact that, like I said, he is not Bale's Batman. Bale seemed more lithe and kung fu-y. You know, like he was. You know, obviously, he trained as a ninja in Batman Begins, and but where Affleck is kind of a beast. He's kind of a brick shithouse. He's powerful.
Yeah, but he doesn't get to do much in Justice League.
No, and that's disappointing. And the fact that the best thing that happened, almost the best scene in Batman vs. Superman, was the warehouse scene, where that sort of, you know,
Arkham brutalizes everyone.
That Arkham Knight style scene where he beats shit out, which was you're like, oh, that's Batman. That's what he can do. I mean, in fairness, he didn't. We talked about it in our last podcast. He's very human, and hasn't got any superpowers, so he has to be very careful in battling other superpowered beings, and unfortunately he doesn't really get to beat the shit out of too many people in this film, but it would have been nice if he had something like that, because he almost felt neglected.
Yeah. Which, you've got, that does definitely cast shade on, is he really interested in this anymore? I think he kind of wants to step out now.
I think he might. I get the impression he doesn't sound very enthusiastic about it.
I think the idea of playing Batman, when they first came to him, said, like, we want you to be Batman in Batman v Superman, he was like, cool. And people first saw the scene in the rain where Superman comes down through the bat sign and stuff, and was like, holy shit, that looks really cool. And then the panning the movie got, and just the bad press that he has had to deal with since then, it's kind of, you know what?
More trouble than
it's worth. I make fucking Oscar movies.
Yeah. Maybe he's more interested in directing now.
Yeah. It's like, okay, you know what? I'm done. If people had kind of engaged in this and it was fun, then yeah, okay, cool. But this is just an uphill struggle. I don't want to do the press junkets, because people are always going to fucking ask me, are you going to be doing the next Batman? Are you in? Are you out? You don't seem very excited. Just watch the fucking movie, please.
I mean, fairly, sorry for him. Everyone kind of said everyone was generally fairly complimentary of his,
in BVS,
of his role in that. He was one of the stronger points. But I'm going to give a tiny spoiler here, guys, so if you haven't seen Justice League yet, just skip the next 2 minutes. I really, really... it's happening now. Skip.
Okay, go.
I really enjoyed that Batman got the turnaround on him. Superman turned it around him in this time when Superman was resurrected. Do you bleed?
Yeah.
And I'm like, and then later on, it's like,
I'm definitely bleeding.
It was nice. I like it. So, spoiler over. We should... I think for a change, we actually agreed.
Yeah,
on a DC film, and they're moving in the right direction. They're moving in the right direction, and it's fun.
Mm-hmm.
See it, you'll enjoy it.
I am looking forward to where this movie finishes all the characters. I'm intrigued and interested and excited to see where their individual stories branch off from here, because I had a good time with them, and I want to see more.
Yeah, well, we will. Next year will be Aquaman versus the Black Panther.
Oh shit, yes it will. I am not excited about Black Panther at all.
No. Coming to America of a superhero film. That's what I want to see.
Sexual chocolate.
Chocolate.
All right, on that note, we're going to have a quick break, and we'll be back to talk about a few other bits and pieces. Thank you. And we are back. Let's change topic. You marathoned through Mindhunter on Netflix
last week, yes.
Tell me about it.
Mindhunter is, what would you call it? Sort of a cross between a police procedural and a psychological thriller.
Okay. This is brought to you by David Fincher, right?
Is that Fincher production?
I think so.
I didn't notice his name against anything, but that's not to say he didn't have anything to... He has directed an episode. There you go. Okay. I didn't even notice. There is a show on the ABC called Screenplay. Screenplay, that's on Channel 7. Screen Time, I think.
Right.
And it's hosted by one of the former members of A Chaser.
Mm-hmm.
It's about to talk about... It's a series similar to our podcast, except they're professional.
What are you suggesting that we aren't professional, sir?
You can hear someone's movie in the background.
We can, for anyone who is interested. That is X-Men Days of Future Past, the Rogue Cut. Shay is playing it very loudly.
And they don't have that on ABC, so they'll talk about a movie and what's happening and what they're watching on TV.
Yeah.
And basically, the final segment of the show is a complete rip-off of our segment, What Have You Been Watching?
God, those thieving
bastards. Thieving ABC communists.
Yeah.
How
dare they do that before we were even on the air?
No, they haven't even been on the air for about a couple of months, so...
Oh, they have totally ripped us off.
We predate them. And they have regular contributors, and one of the things they're like, what are you watching? And someone said they had smashed out the whole season of Mindhunter the last weekend. And being that I was kind of in the mood for something new, I thought I'd give it a try. So I actually had no idea Fincher was behind this.
Okay.
But it does make sense. He did actually direct 4 episodes. It's about serial killers.
Yeah.
It's basically set within the FBI and in the unit that develops the concept of profiling serial killers.
Okay.
And basically pioneers it, develops it, and then has to sort of learn about it by the way they actually sort of develop their profiling system is by actually interviewing incarcerated serial killers.
So is it like a period piece?
It is set in the 70s.
The 70s, yeah.
The main character has a hilarious name for Australians. It's played by Jonathan Groff, who I never heard of before.
Okay.
He plays Holden Ford.
All right. That sounds like the most generic ass name that you're ever going to get.
It's like a fake name. You're going to make up a fake name for the police. Holden Ford. If we have any, well, for our legions of Canadian friends, apparently.
Yes.
How you doing, eh?
When I found out about that, I just had to go and watch The Great White North again.
Yes.
So good.
Yeah.
So good. Anyway, sorry.
I was going to say, for any of our Canadian or non-Australian friends, Holden is a very famous brand of Australian car. Mm. Very famous. And, of course, everyone knows what Ford is. Ford is also a brand of car that was also made in Australia until very recently. So the fact that those two names were together is kind of hilarious because they were very great rivals, those two companies in Australia. But anyway, so Holden Ford is our main guy who is sort of a young up-and-coming FBI officer. There's a special agent, or what do you want to call it?
Mm-hmm.
And he sort of starts to... He meets an interesting guy doing a talk about serial killers and starts to think if maybe it might be a better way to try and catch them is to find them before they actually start committing crimes. Maybe profiling can help them do that.
Okay.
He's joined by Bill Tench, who played by Holt McNally. Callani? You'll know him because he's the guy from...
Rand McNally.
He's the guy from Fight Club.
Oh, yeah.
He's the guy who says, in Project Mayhem, so if you die, you do have a name. His name was Robert Paulson.
Yeah, that's it. You know? He's been in loads of stuff.
Yeah, he's one of those guys who pops up, but I always think he's the guy from Fight Club.
Mm.
And they are joined later on by a psychology professor from a university, played by someone you'd be very familiar with, Anna Torv.
I had heard that she was
from Fringe.
From Fringe, yes.
Which I did watch some of, as per our agreement earlier in the year.
Excellent.
It's silly. but she's cute, and she is Australian. And they And yeah, they're basically they're interviewing serial killers. They're at the same time, they're also helping small local police departments solve cases using their profiling techniques as a method to actually prove that their techniques
work
and prove to their superiors that their research is worth continuing.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's at the same time we have cutbacks between someone in Kansas City who may be a serial killer.
Mm-hmm.
I suspect I know who it is. In a sense, I assume it's actually based on a genuine actual serial killer.
That would kind of make sense.
Considering it is set in the real world. You know, they talk a lot about Charles Manson, that kind of thing. And it's thoroughly fascinating because it it's become such a trope in serial killer films, you know, and profiling has become such a trope. You know, there's whole TV shows based around it. You know, and what was the show? The Guardian was the guy. It was a whole TV show. It had an Australian actor, Simon Baker, in it.
Okay.
But either way, so it's become such a trope and so common.
Well, you think of, like, Clarice Starling and all of that stuff from the Hannibal series.
What do you see, Clarice, when you look at him, you know, and, you know, that kind of thing. And so just to go back to a time and a world where they didn't really understand what a psychopath was, or the idea of this is when they invented the term serial killer.
Mm.
They actually called them sequence killers. And the idea of a serial killer was kind of weird and out there and hadn't really been fully fleshed out and developed yet. So this is actually going back to where that whole idea started. It's quite fascinating. I don't know how true it is. I mean, I think it's based on someone's book. I'm actually thinking now of actually going and trying to get that book so I can actually read it. And
imagine it'd be fascinating. I've heard that it's a very, very kind of clinical kind of show. It's very dry and kind of fights back to just casual viewing. You really have to pay attention to
it. Yes, that's true. I think it's a fair way to describe it. I mean, if you're looking for car chases and and shootouts, it's not the show for you.
Yeah.
Mind you, it does open with a siege.
Okay.
And ends with a shooting, but there's not a lot of that.
Mm.
So if you're looking for action and adventure, and this is not...
Every sort of screenshot that I've seen, it's just people sitting around a table talking
in
very grey rooms with stark lighting, and that's it.
But it's a battle. it's a battle of wits between the serial killers who don't really want to talk to these people and the FBI guys, and you know, who are trying to get what they want from them, and you know, they have to take some strange and unpopular paths and tactics to get what they want from these serial killers. So at the same time, because you see a fair bit of their personal life, and I like that it's just there out on the edge. So you learn it's a little bit about who these people are, these FBI agents and stuff. So they're not just complete, you know, ciphers sitting there, you know, talking to serial killers. They're fleshed out people.
Okay.
We see their lives.
Okay.
And you know, this is a very 2017 show.
Oh, okay.
It's the latest show to, I don't know, just jump in the social justice warrior basket to have an openly, well, not openly, but a gay character.
Okay.
It's openly on the show. We see that they are gay.
Mm.
Though it's sort of like, it's obviously, their character can't admit they're gay.
Mm. So where's it set?
It's set in the United States.
Yeah.
Obviously, they're based in Quantico, Virginia, which is FBI headquarters.
Yeah.
But you know, they jump around all over the place while
they're
interviewing serial killers. And I just, it was so good. It was so Moorish.
Okay.
It's like, you know, occasionally you hit a TV show and you go, boom, this show was made for me. This is exactly what I want in a TV show.
Mm-hmm.
Like, and this is it. Like, I've been looking at it for a while going, I don't know what that is.
Yeah.
And I don't know if I want to watch it. And, like, I saw Stephen King on Twitter say he really, really enjoyed it, which is usually a good sign because...
He has generally pretty good taste.
Like, he recommended a book earlier in the year that he'd really enjoyed reading, which, if you're an author and Stephen King tweets that he likes the book...
Can you imagine, like, if Stephen King ever tweeted, George Sharon has written an awesome book, I'd probably cream my pants.
Yeah. I mean, that and the fact that you'd probably just get a check the next day because people would go out because he's got millions and millions and millions of followers.
Yeah.
And you know, you could put that on the cover. Stephen King said this.
Yeah.
So I mean, I don't know if Alpha was particularly famous, but I actually ended up buying your book and reading it, and I really, really enjoyed it.
Okay.
So I was one of those people giving my 10 cents to the author, but so King tweets that I should probably pay more attention.
Yeah.
I was like, I don't know, but when I jumped into it, well, I think I smashed probably 8 of the 10 episodes on last Friday night. Damn. And then I actually was like, you know that thing, I have deliberately not looked at how many episodes there are, because I want there to be about 15.
Yeah.
But then you secretly know these Netflix shows are usually only ever have 10. And yeah. So you get through the last one and it's like back to episode one, you're like, was it edited on a cliffhanger too? And you're like, now I have to wait a full fucking year for another episode.
Yeah, it sucks.
But, you know, and it just goes back to that point. There are 17 quintillion episodes of Two and a Half Men and The Big Bang Theory. Is every other day you turn on an episode you've never seen before, and you're like, it's utter trash.
Mm-hmm.
But why is it the good shit? There's only 10 episodes of it. That's probably why it's good shit.
Yeah. Like they have a 22-episode budget, but they use it in 10.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I certainly hope that Mindhunter gets another season. I enjoyed it immensely.
Well, it seems like it's getting some real critical acclaim, which is good.
And you think
it's a Netflix show, so there's not many of those that have only run for one season. So
Sense8.
That had two seasons, and it's finishing off with a movie.
Oh, really? Okay, yes. Wow.
Which is good, because season two fixed a lot of the problems of season one. It was really good.
I know a lot of people liked it.
Really good place. It's like, yeah, bring out season three. Cancelled. No! Movie. Yay! Mixed emotions here.
I'll take it.
Yeah.
how, you know, like, it seems to be like the Firefly fans out there who learned when they were making a Serenity movie.
Mm.
You mean, like, I would have liked another four seasons, but I'll take what I can get.
Yeah, I'll take what I can get. Like, if I could have just one more season of Futurama, that'd be delightful.
Well, I mean, they did bring it back. How many times have they brought that back? Twice.
They brought that twice, yeah.
So I don't like our chances now. Then again, for something like Netflix or an Amazon, you know, there's so much competition for the content these days.
I just realised there was a show that I did watch, and I have actually watched it twice, and it was the Netflix show Big Mouth. The animated adult raucous. It's set in a school with all the young kids. They're just on that wonderful, delightful precipice of puberty. And it's gross-out comedy in the style of Family Guy, but even more so. It's a bit more intelligent, more akin to, like, a South Park, but it's... it's not quite any of those, and it doesn't quite fully work, but it is funny if you can get into the sense of humor of it. And the idea of it is there's a group of kids in this school that you kind of follow their lives and how they're having to deal with, like, oh, this girl has got a reputation for being a blowjob machine, oh, I'm really nervous because of the size of my cock and things like that. And it's just kind of expressing all of the extreme thoughts that anyone would have going through puberty and being stuck in a position like, I really like this girl and we're stuck in 7 minutes in heaven together. What's going to happen? And it plays on those childhood fears quite well.
Would you recommend it?
Not really. The episodes are short and the season is, I think, 10 or 11 episodes. It's not long. So it's worth giving it a go because you might engage with it. I don't think you'd like it, Trav.
Yeah.
But I feel like for adult cartoons out there, there's not too much, and at least it's a...
It's more than there ever used to be. I'm hoping it'll be another season of BoJack Horseman soon.
BoJack has got a much higher barrier for entry. This is much more lowest common denominator. So it is easier to just jump in and jump out. There's not so much impetus of you've kind of got to know what has happened the rest of the season.
Speaking of adult animation, though, I learned recently that Bob's Burgers is currently now reading its tits off.
Really?
Mm. Apparently, previously, I don't. If you ever saw the Simpsons Family Guy crossover, there was a funny joke where they were in planes and they were crashing. And, you know, they made a joke about how, oh, we've been carrying that guy. And the Bob Burger guy pops up in the cameo. And Peter Griffin says, oh, yeah, we've been carrying that guy for years.
Yeah.
But currently, I believe it outrates Family Guy. So I think...
watched the Bob's Burgers.
Well, I mean, it's harder because it's not on any of the streaming services. Mm. But it's really fucking good.
It's really good?
Yeah.
Okay.
I like it a lot. Yeah. But that said, you're a fan of Archer, aren't you?
I do love Archie.
So you're going to have the opposite problem to what I had.
Mm.
Is the same guy who voices Bob is the guy who voices Archer. And he does pretty much the same voice.
Oh, no.
So when I watch Archer, an episode of Archer, I'm like, that's the guy from Bob's Burgers. And his wife, the guy who plays his wife in Bob's Burgers,
yeah,
is also one of the... She voices characters in, Archer as well. And you're like, no, I'm sorry. I'm sorry, you're... This isn't the guys from Bob's Burgers. I can't buy them. What are they doing in Archer? I can't buy it. So you'll have the opposite problem, I suspect.
That's a shame.
And that maybe it won't be such a big deal for you. I don't know.
Maybe. Who knows?
We should move on because it's been an exciting week for Nintendo fans. Wait, an exciting year for Nintendo fans.
Yeah, it's been
but a good finally, year for Nintendo. But they've entered a new world of this week, Nintendo fans, and that is something third-party developers?
Third-party supporters.
Developers. Yeah. So, like, these are games that don't involve Mario or Zelda. So
no.
This week we've got... I am being facetious. What has landed this week in the world of Nintendo?
Well, we have had two Bethesda offerings of the new Doom, as well as... it's not the latest remastering that came to the Xbox One and the PS4 of Skyrim, but it is a far graphically improved version versus the 360 and PS3 versions. And we also got Rockstar on Nintendo platform with L.A. Noire. These are fucking awesome games. I played Doom before on the Xbox One, really enjoyed it. Didn't get very far because I don't have much time to sit in front of a TV. The reason why I didn't ever get Skyrim before now. Having them on the go, I've had Skyrim for 24 hours and I've probably played over 5 hours of it already. And really enjoying it. Really worried that I'm not going to see the light of day for a while.
You won't.
Doom is awesome. Graphically, it's not fantastic, but it does its job. It plays really smoothly. It is really fun shooter. And considering there aren't any first-person shooters on the Switch at the moment, it's filling a hole, and it fills a hole very, very well. It's a very stable game. It looks good. The graphics are fine. On the handheld mode, it's awesome. The gunplay is really good fun. It is everything that you want it to be. Plus, it's got the multiplayer on there as well, which is actually good fun. And the fact that the Switch has got such a high attach rate, there's a lot of people on the multiplayer as well. So you're not having to wait a long time for the games to start up. And it's just really good. It's kind of run and gun fun. L.A. Noire is... This is the first time I've ever played this game. This is a remaster, which has also come to Xbox and PlayStation consoles. I've never played this game before, and it is really good. I'm really enjoying it. It's very slow. I love that noir era detective stories, LA Confidential kind of thing. I really enjoy that aesthetic, and the story is slow, methodical cases just going one at a time, and it's so perfect for the Switch, where you just kind of got 20 minutes, half hour to play. You can play through a mission, you can do the investigations, you can have a bit of a car chase, you can put it into sleep mode and then carry on later on whenever you want. Really enjoying this first year of Switch is fucking awesome.
2011 called, they want their games back.
No, 2011 called and it's like, hey, we're coming back again.
Ironically, I've played all of those games. Not so recently. I did play L.A. Noire. I was quite excited when that came out back in, what was it, 2011, 2012? Flawed. Yes. Ambitious.
Yes.
But flawed, I think. It's just... what frustrated me, I mean, I liked the idea of a noirish detective story as well, set in the 40s, and again, yeah, it does evoke that whole sort of LA Confidential sort of vibe, and I love that, like, driving around in a car and listening to the 1940s radio about communists and stuff. It's very cool. The detective work doesn't quite work, and one of the big selling points of the game at the time was the motion capture of the artists, or of the actors' faces, so you could watch the faces and try and tell from their quirks whether they were lying and stuff, but they tend to make it pretty frickin' obvious, like,
yeah, they
shift you in their shifty eyes, and
it's it's fun, but it's kind of old before its time as well. I can't imagine that being particularly engaging for too long. I mean, I don't really find the interrogation parts that fun. It's just kind of watching the story more than anything, almost like kind of a visual novel.
Almost an interactive movie.
Interactive movie, kind of Telltale Games sort of thing, where you have a little bit of control about where the character goes and some of the responses and how the story sort of plays out. I'm just really enjoying the aesthetic and just the pace of it. It's a nice kind of palate cleanser for Doom, for Skyrim, for
it's,
Mario.
It's by no means a bad game.
No, it's good.
What frustrated me, and I talked to Vis the other day when we saw Justice League, was, I don't know if you've got to the point yet, I won't spoil it to you, but there's a point where you're doing investigating a crime, and then you investigate the next one, and then like they're like, oh my god, who did it? And you're like, oh, that guy. That guy there, he was at the last one. You got usually spot the guy, and like he was the guy who was the he was there at the last scene, so it's him, he's the guy. And then like the game's like, no, you can't investigate him. You have to go off and accuse somebody else of a crime who you know didn't do it, and you have to interrogate him and get him to admit that he did it. And then you're like, oh, well, that's not fun, you know? Like I'm trying to be a detective. I want to be a detective. That's still and like I'm being a detective. And I figured out who did it. And I'm not allowed to tell. I'm not allowed to investigate. Oh, fuck that. No, it kind of pulled it completely out of the game. It's made it to have made it so obvious.
Yeah.
That it was somebody else, and then having to go off and then you know pretend it wasn't them, and you're like, oh, it's deeply, deeply unsatisfying.
Yeah.
Doom, speaking of Doom, though, because I won't talk Skyrim over here all day. I have over 400 hours in Skyrim. it's a fucking great game.
Yeah.
I still pick it up occasionally today. It's such a It's six, almost 7 years old now. Fuck you, Bethesda. Where's the next one?
Well,
you keep making money off this one, but come on.
Maybe next year.
Come on, Elder Scrolls 6. That's what we want.
See, I think that just finishing up. I think because what we'll talk about in a minute of Wolfenstein 2, that's coming to the Switch early next year. I think that between Doom, Skyrim, and Wolfenstein 2, Bethesda are very clearly all in on the Switch, which is great. But it's also, I think they're testing and trying to make sure that they will be able to get Skyrim 6, or whatever they officially call it, on Switch as well as Xbox One and PlayStation 4. I think they're testing it.
That would make sense. I picked up Doom this week as well.
Oh, yes.
I have actually... We will talk about it in a second, but I finished Wolfenstein 2 and the first chapter of the DLC. and then like I needed something else to play because I'd done all the... a lot of the Wolfenstein 2 completionist stuff. And I played Doom for a while last year on the Xbox One. But just put it down one day and never picked it up again. I never finished it.
The story isn't exactly...
It's there if you want it.
Yeah.
But I was having fun with it. I think I got to one of those points where I actually got really frustrated and kind of rage quit.
Yeah.
And then I never picked it up again because probably something else came out and distracted. Probably Just Cause 3 or something. I don't know.
Yeah.
And so I picked it up again and, gosh, I forgot how much fun that game is.
Yeah.
It's just run... It's such a classic 90s style shooter.
It's
all run and gun. It's no cover-based shit. No. There's no sitting back sniping from across the map. It's guns blazing.
Which unabashed is fun.
Which is actually I like. It's actually how I like to play FPS games. Like in Wolfenstein 2, for Bova, I mean, Wolfenstein 2 does encourage stealth in sections. Like, you know, you can creep up behind, you know, soldiers and kill them silently, and you can almost take out an entire room in theory without being seen. I'm like, I usually I'd start that way. I go start creeping around, kill out a couple of them, and get. You keep getting busted, like, oh, fuck this. And we get the machine gun out, and almost to a T, every time, you're getting so frustrated trying to sneak, and you'd be like, nah, screw this. Headshot, you know, guns, you know, get the...
Guns blazing.
The guns blazing, and you know what, you do it.
Yeah.
And you're like, oh, well, you know what, I feel like the stealth mechanic isn't quite as supported or useful in this game as it is and it was in the first of the new Wolfensteins. The New Order or whatever it was, the Old Blood. I can't remember which one was the prequel and which one wasn't. I think it was the New Order.
New Order.
And
then there was the
Old
DLC
Blood,
was
the sequel. So I did get around to finishing Wolfenstein since we spoke last. It is a super high quality game. You've got something super very much to look forward to there.
Oh, I can't wait.
Unlike Doom, the story is much more front and center, which is just a huge tribute to Bethesda in the sense that they've actually gone and made an FPS with a fucking story.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, it's fucking revolutionary.
Mm.
And it's like, it's a game with 20, 25 hours in a single player campaign.
No.
Are you listening, EA? That's a 20, that's a 2 and a 0.
Yes.
Because, of course, we had a Battlefront 2 this week.
No
microtransactions.
And but there's none in Battlefield 2 anymore, right? Temporarily.
But it will be temporary. So, that's, I mean, like, if you're talking about a game like Doom there for a second, that's got multiplayer.
Yeah.
It's got a, if you're on Xbox One, it's got a shit ton of extra stuff you can do in there for free.
You got the snap maps.
So I've got snap matches, which are community made maps. I've got arcade mode, multiplayer, and a very comprehensive single player mission. And that is what I want from a AAA game.
Yes.
I don't want a multiplayer game with a 4-hour campaign tacked on the side for $80, $90 plus microtransactions. Nah. Sorry.
Yeah.
No. That's not how this works. I ain't buying into that. So, the back on Wolfenstein, though, that's, you get a... There is no multiplayer, but it would be nice to have had that, but it didn't really need it.
Yeah.
You get 20, 25 hours in a pure single-player campaign and a great story that goes along with it. It does get a bit silly, though. I will pay that.
Well, I'm not really surprised by that. The main character is called B.J. Blazkowicz. Yeah. That's kind of like...
I mean, the last one was...
Holden Ford.
The last one was silly. I like the alternate reality of the Nazis and their Wunderwaffen, you know, their wonder weapons. And, you know, the last game had, like, robotic... The Mecha Hitler in the original, but this one's, like, in the last game, they had lots of robotic soldiers and stuff like that, and big robot suits and stuff like that. And they all come back again in the last game. Sorry, guys, it's come out for years if you haven't played it, I'll spoil it, but you actually do have to visit a Nazi base on the moon, which is kind of fun, because that's a famous conspiracy theory. Then, of course, there was Iron Skies. Sequel's coming out soon.
Yeah.
Which is a very funny movie.
We'll be watching that.
Absolutely. Without Petrea this time. Sorry, that's an in-joke. But
why'd you shoot that guy?
I don't know who was that guy. Why is that funny? This is a movie talker. Jihad or movie talkers. In this game, so instead of going to, we had to up at one. So, I mean, I'm not going to spoil too much plot other than
they're
to say...
They're going to Atlantis.
Not quite. You go to Venus. The Nazi base is now on Venus. I'm sorry, guys, if I've spoiled it, but, you know, whatever. You get there anyway, but it's like, it's just so silly. I'm like, Venus? Really? It's 1965. It's 20 years since the end of the Second World War. Some have managed to colonize the moon and Venus. But it's at one point you actually have to steal a Nazi UFO and fly to Venus for a mission. And like, you fly home, but I'm like, and just like B.J. Blazkowicz just gets in the UFO and just takes off. And I'm like, it's...
And he just happens to know how to fly
a Nazi UFO from Venus to Earth. He knows how to navigate in space as well, considering, I would imagine, I haven't navigated too much in space recently, but I would imagine it's quite a complex piece of work to do.
There's forwards, there's backwards,
up is down,
left and right. You know, that you can control that with an Xbox controller, dude.
Yes, I checked it though, I was curious, because this is... This is stretching the bounds a little bit of gaming. I googled how long does it take to get from the Earth to Venus, as they have sent probes, and it takes about 3 months. And somehow he manages to get in a Nazi UFO. I'm sorry, should I be looking as deeply into a first person shooter's plot?
No,
but not, I don't know.
One that involves mechanized Nazis.
And I'm just like, okay. He's gonna, okay. But it was a fun mission nonetheless.
But that's the point, is it's fun and it kept you going. I mean, yes, it goes off on this ridiculous flight of fancy and it's just goes into almost farce in its comedy, but does
it wasn't presented really as comedy. It was sort of, well, it was actually a bit in a way. But yeah, you're right. It's never stops being fun. And I think I said this last time. What I love about the Wolfenstein games is, and I like it a little bit with Doom, is get to a point and you can do something, and you can get it wrong and fuck it up 10 times.
Mm.
But you never feel like, I can't do this. I'm just not doing it right.
Mm.
It's a case of, I've just got to do this different. And there's so many different ways you can approach the situation. And it's just a case of just doing things in the right sequence.
Yeah.
And so, okay, I can stealth kill those two guys, move to that part of a room, stealth kill this guy. Now I can't stealth kill that guy because he's in a robot suit. I'm going to have to go full auto from here. You know, like, it's just the way how you order the approach. And it's reasonably forgiving of checkpoints. Mm. And yeah, it's just a case of figuring out how to do it.
Yeah.
And only, I'll be honest, I did do this once, so make me a bit of a noob. But I only at one point did I have to turn the difficulty down. There is one battle towards the very end, which is fucking ridiculous.
Now, I've heard that the beginning is quite brutal.
It is. It's just straight in.
Yeah.
Straight in, and the whole first, and you'll find it when you play it.
Mm.
The entire first mission, the start of a first mission, so it's a long first mission.
Mm.
The start of a first mission that you do in a wheelchair.
They had something a sequence similar to it in the first one, didn't they?
It did.
Where this you had the beach sequence, and then you were in the hospital.
Yeah. But this time you actually have to go around a submarine killing Nazis in a wheelchair.
Fantastic sentence.
I don't think I ever thought I'd find myself saying that. It's one of my favorite. It's probably the best game of the year for me. Once I finish it off, there's extra missions you can do. When you kill commanders in the game, they drop Enigma cards.
Oh yeah,
like for the Enigma machine, the Nazi code machine, and you can actually go to a point somewhere in your sort of hub world, which is a submarine.
Yeah,
and you can actually decode using his Enigma cards. You can decode the locations of Nazi commanders across the United States,
okay.
And so it's like an extra step. So apart outside the game, you can do these extra assassination missions to go off and kill these Nazi commanders around the place, and it helps you retake the United States.
Cool.
And unfortunately, it does get to a point where even you will not finish the game with enough Enigma cards to do them all. So you'll need to jump back into the game and do missions again to grind a few extra Enigma cards, but it wasn't too bad.
Yeah.
And I suppose being a bit of a... This game brings out the completionist in me.
Okay.
So I had to do that. It took me a while. But mastering the Enigma game takes a little while.
Mm.
But then I went, okay, I've done all that.
Yeah.
What do I do now? And so I went out and I bought the season pass, which I...
Because they've just announced like a whole bunch of sort of, like character specific stories and stuff.
Well, you can actually play chapter zero of a DLC now, which introduces you to those characters.
Mm.
So you've got which isn't particularly original in a way, because there are certain augmentations that BJ gets during the main story campaign, and the characters kind of do tend to mirror those augmentations a little bit.
Okay, yeah.
So it's just like, well, this character, his first character is an ex-football player who can bash through walls.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's like a sexy French spy or something who can crawl under through vents and stuff. And then there's a soldier who's got... the soldier was probably the worst part of it. But it's not very substantial, Chapter Zero.
Mm.
It's more like a taste.
Mm.
In fact, I'm surprised they didn't give Chapter Zero away for free, frankly. Mm. Because I think that would be...
Well, I mean, you got it as part of the season pass, right?
Correct, yeah.
How much was the season pass?
$30.
$30, okay.
Which I don't think is unreasonable. If they... I don't... Like, if the chapters are as insubstantial as Chapter Zero is, I would feel very ripped off.
Mm.
But I feel like Chapter Zero is, like I said, a taste.
Yeah. It sounds like the Legend of Zelda DLC. It came out and there was, like... a bunch of little bits, like almost like a debug thing where you could track on the map the last 250 hours of your journey, blah blah blah, and it was kind of, oh, that's fine, that's cool, that's not worth it, $30, but the story content is coming next month apparently, that's what everyone's waiting for, this is just a taste, kind of like, you get something right now, you've given us your money, you get a little bit of initial satisfaction, but the real meal comes a little.
I feel like, though, with Nintendo, you've got despite not being a Nintendo fan, I feel like you've got more confidence in them. I mean, Nintendo, especially with their...
There's the Nintendo quality.
With the Nintendo, especially with their sort of franchise players,
mm-hmm.
with their marquee properties, Zelda, Mario, Metroid, They don't fuck around.
No.
And this is a... You fuck around with a Zelda game, you are pissing off a huge portion of your audience because Nintendo fans take this shit serious. So I would feel really confident with that DLC being substantial and to a very high standard.
Yeah.
Because they just can't fuck around with that. Nintendo are on that... They're just too close to the edge.
Yeah.
They're doing well now.
Yeah.
But we saw they did well in the Wii.
A year ago, they were in a very, very dire position.
So they can't fuck around with this property. It's got to be good.
Yeah.
I feel like in the world of Xbox PlayStation, the rivers run thick with the corpses of DLC's past that were horrible. And people feeling ripped off. You know, you can just don't have to look very far at all for people getting pretty pissed off about shitty DLC. The last game I bought the season pass for was The Division.
Same here, and I have not been back to play any of it. That being said, I did end up putting, I think, about 90 hours into just the base game, and it's like, you know what? I really enjoyed that. I'm okay chucking them a few
more dollars. The base game, but yeah, and then like I just didn't get any value out of that extra season pass. Like I stuck my head in once, twice, but okay. Well, I see updates every now and again.
Yeah,
on Facebook.
Yeah,
from the developers, and I'll download and then automatically downloads them in the background. So we'll see what they are. They're terrible.
They're not for you. I think is the way of saying it.
I think most of our audience says the same thing as me. So it could just be me. I don't think terribly many people are playing that game anymore.
The drop off was, but they apparently they've fixed a lot of the problems that helped drive people away. But no one's going back.
Once they've left, there's
just too many online social things like Destiny 2 dropped, and everyone was on that, and Ubisoft themselves kind of butchered themselves a little bit this past year or so with The Division, with Watch Dogs 2, with For Honor, Ghost Recon. And
Fractured Butthole
as well. There's only so much time we can play on games, man.
I've been thinking once you've lost them, you've lost them. But I'm looking forward to it's the 14th of December when this chapter drops. It's Bethesda, so I have more confidence than I would if it was EA or Ubisoft, who have no regard for their audience.
Very patchy.
EA has been voted how many times the worst company in America?
Oh, God, yeah.
Ubisoft
have been getting better these last few years. Like, I have played the first hour and a half of New Assassin's Creed. Good. Very beautiful. Very, very pretty.
Does one need to be an Assassin's Creed fan to enjoy it?
No, you don't. Because so far, I have not had anything that is tying me to... Oh, you need to have played the last 11 games to actually understand this. It's all just, you are this kick-ass assassin dude who's not even technically part of the Assassin's Creed yet, I don't think, in Egypt, which looks beautiful, and it's much more of an RPG open world kind of thing. And it's fun.
Because I've been considering going back, because I'm out of games now. I finished Doom last night. Disappointingly, I beat the boss in the first try. and I tried a little bit of arcade mode and a couple of the community maps today, and it's a little bit like, yeah, there's not really any reason to play this, you know. Just get a high score, you know. It lacks the meaning behind. You're looking and going, I might start the campaign again. Or do I get out Metal Gear Solid again? So I enjoyed that, but I feel like if it's an open world RPG, maybe it's time to go back and try it again, because I didn't like, I've said many times, I only played the first one for a couple of hours and didn't like it.
The second one actually got a much better story,
as they said, and everyone says the first one was almost a demo to see how they could do it, and so I need something to play coming into Christmas.
Oh, thank you, mate. I've got the physical copy, so very nice.
Physical copies?
Yeah, physical copies.
It's a crazy idea, but it might just work. I know. It'll take off.
You know what? I got L.A. Noire, and I got Doom, physical copies for the Switch, and the thing that just makes the Switch so much better than all the other consoles, you put the cartridge in, and you can start playing.
Some of these games have to download shit, don't they?
Because a little thing comes up, there is an update that requires start playing anyway, and like go straight
in. But so you still have to download extra content, but you can start playing anyway.
You can start playing straight away, whereas you put in a game, it's like, alright, it's loading. It's like, okay, I'm waiting.
That is definitely a flaw. Like, even
it's a fucking lie as well. It's like, oh, 20% ready to play. Okay, you get to the open
menu and you're like, nah.
Thing. It's like, what the fuck is this shit?
That's something they really should work on at it, you know. They really should, like, I mean...
Put a game in and play.
I bought Wolfenstein 2, like, 2 days after it came out, and there was a massive update to download. Or maybe it was extra content, it just wasn't on the disc, I don't know.
Well, a lot of them are because of the Xbox One X and the PS4 Pro. They're starting to push out more of those 4K textures and things, and so you're getting those updates whether you have that console or not, and it means that you are using up a lot more of your hard drive space, and it takes fucking forever to download.
It does, and you go, oh, I want to start playing now.
Mm-hmm.
So that is a definite advantage of the Nintendo product.
Seems to have been something that, you know, they got right for basically every generation except this one, where it's like, oh no, you have to download it, and then it's still, you need to put the disc in to play it anyway.
Yeah.
For fuck's sake.
Yeah, I was having a look at that going, do I want an Xbox One X? I'm like, probably not. I don't have a 4K telly. I don't really see the point. I just wait for the next gen.
They're fine. I mean, if you've got a 4K TV, if you've got HDR, then you're going to see much more quality of life improvements on it versus anything else. If you haven't, there's not really any point. If you want to future-proof yourself, if you're thinking, okay, I'm going to be getting a 4K TV not too far from now, if you're getting Black Friday or Cyber Monday sales or something like that, yeah, maybe if you can pick one up, but you don't need it because your current console will do everything that this one does, just not quite as quick and not quite as pretty.
Any game that's ever slowed me down, and we're completely off topic.
Just Cause 3?
Just Cause 3.
Yeah.
It's the only console game I've ever played that's ever done that.
Same.
It chugged.
Which is a shame because that was so much fun.
It was, a lot of that game was fun.
Yeah.
Except they kind of seemed to have got about halfway through the game and gone, oh, that'll do.
It's true.
Because of that whole, if those who've not played it, you're island hopping and it's basically complete open world destruction.
Mm-hmm.
Causing chaos is the point of the game. And there's two smaller islands, I think, you start with, and you work your way through them, and they are packed with stuff, content, characters, things to do. And you get to the giant, you think to yourself, oh, there's that giant island at the top of the map, there's still to go, and you get to that island, and it's basically empty.
Yeah. I managed to go through and actually complete all the missions before I actually got to them with the story mode, and now I go in, and it's like, I've already done this. Just, you know, if I exit out of the mission, everything's all the blue rebellion flags. If I go into the mission, everything's the red imperial sign. Like,
I hope they do a Just Cause 4, because I enjoy the Just Cause games, but I don't know what they did with that one, but that one was seriously the most frustrating console game I've ever played.
They just pushed it too far.
It was just too hard. It was asking too much. I wonder if you played that on the One X if it would perform better.
Well, it should, in theory, because apparently it kind of automatically just improves frame rates and things like that a little bit more.
If Microsoft are keen for me to find out, we'll plug it on the show if that's the case.
Yeah.
If you're keen to provide an Xbox One X, we're happy to do the test. I have a physical game at home.
Yes.
Happy to give it a try, Microsoft.
I have the game as well. We can just give it a bit of a test.
We are happy. We are completely non-biased about these things. We're for sale. We've said it before.
We will shill for anyone. Anything else you want to talk about? Or
I just like to sort of finish off on a fairly patriotic note and say hello to all our fans in the Great White North.
Hey there, buddy.
Hey there, buddy. We're thinking about you. In these times where it's getting cold up there, you know, and Justin Trudeau just causing controversy over in the APEC summit or whatever it was, and, you know, we're with you.
Yes.
We understand your pain.
Hunker down, put some more wood on the fire, drink some maple syrup,
some
and
Canadian bacon
to Fozzie.
Fozzie, absolutely.
Yes.
And potentially, you know, maybe Shania Twain. She's Canadian.
That's so cruel.
And Murray, it's just be proud of who you are. Winter will end. It's hockey season after all. Many things to look forward to.
On that note, farewell.
Farewell.